Hi, good morning. We're going to start the session, and please make yourself comfortable and walk in, get a seat. There are still more seats here. I'm Mike Gruia, the CEO of the UMT 360. Today is a special day for me to talk about, and actually not to talk, to introduce people that will talk about subjects or topics they are very dear to me, things that I've done for a while. Actually, I'm thinking for the last 20 years, I've been involved in this space. People, they ask me sometimes what I do. So then I say portfolio analytics, and most of them, they don't know what it means. And one thing that I think will make sense as we're going to try to understand the trends, to do something that Ludo did yesterday. It said, let's put the things into a perspective, the history perspective, so we can see some of the trajectory and we can see how all these trends or all these forces, they are at work. So one of the questions that I've been asked is the, how the whole thing started. And I would say, I look back, I would say more than 20 years ago, I was, at that time, I was working in New York, and I was doing, with UMT, a consulting gig at Chase Manhattan for the institutional trust business. And what we were doing at the time, this was in the mid-90s, we were re-engineering their processes. And the chief executive, we had a conversation, and he asked me, what do you think is going to be next? And I was thinking also for a while what will be next. And with some hesitation, I said, I think that the next thing we need to do, we're doing maybe a decent job of re-engineering the process, but perhaps the biggest problem is the investment process altogether. And then I realized that actually we're moving into the area of the investment process. And to further qualify and not to have any confusion, this is the enterprise investment process. And what we did at the time, we looked to the world of the projects, and we saw that most of the focus was in the area of scheduling. And a little bit more afterwards, we saw some focus in the area of resources. However, if you think from this is in some way, this is the people that they build things, that's what they need to worry about. But the people that they pay for that, that's not what they're really interested in. The people that they pay for that, they are interested in benefits, and they are interested in benefits realization. So this got us to look to the problem a little bit, and one thing led to another, and we built a software that will address that. And then the idea of portfolios started. Was way ahead of his time, and things that are way, way of their time, they are difficult, and they are difficult in not so much in convincing only clients, but also convincing the industry analyst that there is a new space there. And we done some work. We convinced people at Giga, which right now is Forrester. We talked with people at Meta. We talked with people at Gartner. And finally, even some of them, they changed the name from project management space to project and portfolio management space. And the whole thing, we're able to work at the time with more than 50 clients on that. And the thing culminated in Microsoft acquiring the company, we're acquiring the software portion of the company. And this was a great experience. Some of us that are still in the room, we've been on both sides. And we're able to see something from 50 companies implementing portfolio management. Perhaps some of the numbers that I've seen right now over the last few years, 6 years or more, I think the numbers are in the thousands. So there's been a shift. Many of you, I assume, they are using portfolio management actually just for the sake of labeling thing. How many they are using portfolio management in the project server 2010 or 2013? So I would say about half. We got to see what we do with the other half. So this took us to all the way to 2006. And then right now, let's start to see how we moved into the future. Around 2009, we left Microsoft and we went back at UMT and to start thinking, what's next? The same question. Nobody asked us. We ask ourselves, what's next? And there are a few things that are happening at the time. As anyone knows, around 2008, 2009, we had some economic meltdown. And this type of situation started to drive a different type of thinking. If before money was not so important, right now money became extremely important. So that's the first shift. Second, there's something that for a while was boiling. The notion of project portfolio management was a great idea. However, the problem is that people, specifically in IT, they are dealing with about a third of the problem, because projects, they represent perhaps a third of the expense. So the question is, and we're talking about investments, the question is how not we deal only with the new investment, how can we have a total view and take in consideration old investments, which are application and infrastructure and things like that, and new investments. How can we deal, what I call in a way, in a horizontal way, with a total portfolio? So this got us to start to think about an integrated portfolio management approach to IT, and actually we found out that it's not limited to IT. The second thing, and Dana will talk more about it, the second thing that we start as a shift, people, they had at the time, the portfolio management is a great idea. The idea of portfolios, they are great. They are aligned to perhaps to the business objective, or hopefully to the business objectives. But if you live in an organization that you have a $500 million portfolio or $1 billion portfolio, is that the right approach? In other words, can you take thousands of projects and align them all the way to the top to a set of drivers? I will guess that this is not the right approach. And perhaps you might want to think in a thematic way. In a thematic way, things, they might be aligned to a customer satisfaction objective, or they might be aligned towards a risk minimization objective, or whatever they are. So that's the creation of the idea. They are not only enterprise portfolio, but you need to consider programs. And a program is a portfolio that is related to a certain theme or a certain objective. So this was the second thing that is going to be exposed here a little bit. And beyond that was another thing that I seen coming, and about 2 years ago, but right now I'm seeing a little bit more. In many ways, most of the thinking here, when we're talking about projects, it's a project-focused thinking. And it makes, maybe it makes sense. But we're raising the possibility that maybe there are places that they should not think about the project-focused thinking, but they should be thinking about product-focused thinking. And I'm not talking about product companies. I'm talking about ITs. Because there is something intriguing about the notion of product and project. Product never dies. That's the truth. At least never dies in the 1 or 2 years period. And if you treat, for example, the whole accounting or the whole marketing as a product, and you treat the projects as milestone and releases, you might have a different view to the whole notion of project portfolio management, and we're going to give you more of an insight on that. So those are some of the things that we're going to give you an insight, but we're not going to leave you hanging and thinking that those are concepts and you cannot do anything about it but look at them. And one thing that we did, and we're going to give you an insight of the thinking that went after we discovered some of those, we realized that the current thinking and the current tools, they cannot really address these problems. Because these problems, they have a different dimension. First, when I'm talking right now about a portfolio of everything in IT, and maybe I use the word everything in IT, it's not only about project. Actually, starts all the way from the business. The business needs applications. The application need infrastructure to run. The application need projects to change them, to make them better. So you need to understand it's an architectural blueprint. You need to understand how everything fits together. So that's one thing. Second is money. It's about money. You need to understand how the money flows. And the money flows from the business, the pace, in a way, for the application, talking about total cost of ownership or all these good things. And application, in a way, pay for the infrastructure and for projects and the whole thing. So the money flows from the top to the bottom, and the benefits, they flow in the other direction. So it's the third, that's the second thing. The third one, it's something that is almost forgotten, and we discover a little bit later, but we incorporate in our thinking. You have so many moving parts. You have projects, you have applications, you have infrastructure. It's almost like you are into an airport, and you are a traffic controller, and all those things, they try to land, and they try to do the right things. And the problem that all of us can face is they will collide. And even worse than that is not only the collision, it's not only about not colliding, but they need to work together to get things done. So those are the type of things that Ben is going to talk about. It is going to show that whatever Dana is presenting is implementable today, and you have a way of doing that. So I want to introduce the speakers today. I thought for a while who could be the best speaker introducing the new insights and the whole thing. And I happen to work with the industry analyst for the last 10 or 15 years, and I could not think about a better speaker than Dana. And why is that? There are some speakers that they have, they are very good industry analysts, but they don't have any real experience. Dana has a lot of experience with small companies, big companies, and not only that, has range. She's been a CFO, so she understands not only how a PMO will think, but she understands how a business person will think, understand the view from the CFO point of view. So that's something. And she's been the last 7 years with Gartner. The second person that will take us into the implementation and show us how all that is possible is Ben Chamberlain. Ben, I worked with Ben for about 10 years. I worked with him at UMT, and then I worked with him at Microsoft, and then again at UMT. And I think in some ways, the one thing that Ben does the best, he talks, he thinks, and he loves talking about portfolio analytics. So, Dana, please take it over.
Thank you very much, give us the insight. Mike. So it's a pleasure to be here with everyone today. Before we get started, how many of you are either managing programs or manage a PMO at this time? Okay, so that's about three quarters of the audience. As Mike said, I'm a practitioner at heart. Everything I try to say is grounded in what we really do for a living. I'm going to tell you up front that I may challenge, very deeply challenge, a lot of the assumptions you've been working on. We've been working this, you're going to be seeing some things that we've been investing about the last 6 months at Gartner into formulating, and this is actually the first public appearance. So you guys are very much on the cutting edge. So I want to start by giving you a little bit of background. In 1998, Peter Drucker wrote an article for Futurist magazine, and he said, the future has already happened. And the minute I read that, I said, ooh, okay, there's something here. His premise was, don't sit around in blue sky, what's coming 50 years from now. Look at what's already happened. Look at what's happened in the last decade or two decades, and understand that those events ripple out. That's where we are. We are now at what I will call a visible inflection point. We've built up from events that happened starting in the 1990s. What got us to where we are today was the process reengineering movement of the 90s. Hammer and Champy's book, Reengineering the Corporation, was published in 93. the development of the Software Engineering Institute with the capability maturity model, the 1996 publishing of the PMBOK guide. We also had the rise of IT with Y2K. And then we had my favorite of all, of which I will guess that 99% of you still don't know what's in the law, is Sarbanes-Oxley. It was the IT land grab from a very hot place. And as a finance person, all it said was that stuff we told you to do with the 1978 Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, you should have done it. And by the way, lock down your user ID. All those things you're checking were not called for in 404. But they were all bricks that built the wall of what we call at Gartner the industrialization of IT. Okay, that's the world that most of you probably still think you live in. What I'm telling you is the crash of 2008, that's what we're living with now. And that's what I want to talk about, which is how these ripples come out to the future. So we, like every other analyst firm, have a maturity model. When I joined the company in 2007, the very first assignment they gave me was to write the maturity model. And I said, I don't believe in those things. And they said, well, then fine, Donna, write a maturity model that you believe in. And I said, well, okay, that's a nice challenging thing to do. So we've had this for about 7 years, and for our clients, most of them, you know, they're delivering process. They use words like consistency. When they call me, they say, well, we've worked on all the tools and templates, and we're rolling all of that out. And what we're saying right now is that's not good enough. That's not good enough at all. There's a chasm, as we call it. Now, there's no sanctity to the levels. Don't think that we think that going to level 5 is some magical bullet. This is an organizational maturity model that says, what are you focused on? What we do know from talking to clients is that you've got to move beyond process. And when I say process, here a capital P, everything we do is a small p process. But what we've seen with the rise of CMMI is the capitalization of that, where that is important. So fess up here. How many of you guys use your stage gates to confirm that all the documents have been filled out for the prior gate? Come on, hands, guilty as charged. Okay, that's the kind of thing we have to stop doing. So what we're looking at is there really two things that move us across to level 3. One is truly deeply understanding what value means. And the other is, and yes, as Mike said, I am a former CFO. Everything in the world comes from follow the money. It's really what's important. But essentially the portfolio where we look at the quantification of value and then the definition of value. And we'll talk about this much further. Now, that involves everybody. 80% of our clients are below level 3. And even some of the high level, some of the level 3 clients, when I really dig in as to how deep their portfolio management is, and whether or not they understand value, they're not quite across the chasm. So it's really a journey for everyone. So one of the things I've noticed is I talk to lots of really good people, and they work hard and they're capable, and yet sometimes they don't see the same thing that I think I'm seeing. So I said, how do bright, capable people not see what's going on around them? And I came up with this 7-step model. So effectively, let's look at the first 3 steps in green. So I'm contending that the competitive landscape is in constant flux. Step 2, Most organizations have already taken all of the easy cost reductions, and that's an important thing to look at. So all the fat, hey, 2008, everybody started cutting fat. Now there may still be further reductions. How many of you saw the Wall Street Journal this morning? We're now in a site where potentially, word this correctly, we're potentially tottering on the edge of deflation. So there are now cost reductions that organizations like McDonald's and other suppliers may have to start taking to, as part of a deflationary cycle. So in organizations, the focus is now shifting to what is competitive advantage. Classic Michael Porter stuff. I've got to have something that makes me unique, because if I'm going to be the lowest cost supplier, I'm probably going to be out of business. That makes the success of the planned investments more important. Now, success to your CEO means that it delivers the outcome that they expected it to deliver. It doesn't mean on time, it doesn't mean on budget, it doesn't mean that IT did whatever IT was supposed to do, and my favorite word, and it was the business's responsibility to do the rest of it. If we are responsible as a senior management team for how things, non-structured initiatives that are not operational, get done, then we're responsible for being part of the solution to get it done completely. So once we look at that, essentially what I realized is those first four steps, unless you know to look for it, unless you, because let's be honest, we are all so busy. You know the classic thing, sometimes it's easy when you're wrestling alligators to remember you got hired to drain the swamp. We were all hired to drain the swamp, and I think the alligators are winning at the moment. So after step four, things start to transform. Success, therefore, isn't completion of the project, it's the value generated. Now, this is where things are starting to get hard. Value generated requires the project to deliver the enablers, and I'm using that because we're not talking all our ROI. It's incredibly important to understand that even as a finance person, this is not, this may go to dollars way out at the end, but it's not dollars the first term. Maximum value generation requires change. Okay, technically, living in a changing environment shouldn't be hard for us, but what I'm starting to see, and I've got a meeting with a client that will remain nameless next week, where the head of the PMO didn't see this change coming, and she's not in that job anymore, so I'm meeting with her successors. By the time we see that everything we're doing running our organizations isn't what serves the company going forward, they've already voted us off the island. I debated this slide because I'm not a person who likes to throw around FUD, you know, fear, uncertainty, and doubt. But guys, I'm here with the FUD. I really sincerely am. This is our window to move fast and start making changes. This is a, I love this quote, and I had to laugh when a client shared it with me. I don't want to see anything about on time, on budget in your reports. Going forward, it's all about value generated. So, all projects need to be clear on what substantive value they're delivering before they're approved. This is the key. So, how many of you own the portfolio as part of your PMO? Okay, only about 20% of you. Now, that's okay, and we can live with this, but it's going to be important to understand where the distinction is. If you are in an operational role and you don't own this, you get to refactor it. Basically, if the process that you don't control screwed up, you get to ensure that no project ever gets executed on your watch where you don't know what the value is. Doesn't matter what they say, you have to go ferret it out. Post-project value assessments only matter. We talk a lot about benefits realization. There's a lot being published on it that says, you know, you track it, you measure it. Even Gartner, God forbid, showed something once that said you could track it for 5 years. Well, you can't track anything you don't know what it is. Fundamentally, and everybody knows in operational environments, things tend to disappear. So you've got to know specifically what it is. True value can be nebulous, but the components, what it makes up, you need to build them out. You need to make sure in the project that you've established the tracking mechanism. Now, there are techniques like value chain, and we'll very quickly look at another results chain example that are tremendously empowering. How many of you are familiar with value chain or results chain? Okay. Anybody who isn't, you need to go find it real fast because it's absolutely the right way to start moving. By the way, results chain actually comes from someone who used to work for DMR. It's John Thorpe, I believe, and you'll see part of it in an old book, which you can still get at Amazon, called The IT Paradox. Okay, how do you measure value? It's not always financial, but it has to be something. So they're in basically value for most of us in the room is a defined leading indicator. Because financial value, me as a finance person talking, if it doesn't run through the general ledger, it doesn't exist. If there's not a GL code, it doesn't exist. Either contract gets changed, you've got a product revenue stream. Other than that, it's something that contributes to value. Your project manager's in the driver's seat. That means those of you who have box checkers working for you, they're probably not going to cut it going forward. I was just talking with a CIO up in Washington State, and he said, in fact, now they do primarily contract PMs, that even though they try to interview really well, they get rid of 40% of the ones they hire in the first 90 days, because even though they can talk a great game, fundamentally they're still box checkers. We can't do it. The PM is so critically important to this future because they're the one that makes the tie-breaking decisions. Well, what do I do? I want to do this, I want to do that, but the team. Scope. All of what we are supposed to be doing is what delivers value. So the PMO must design the support systems that get to value. Virtual business case. Now, remember I told you that if you don't own the business case up front, what you have to do is ex post facto, create a virtual business case. I really don't care what paper they handed you. You need to create, your project managers need to create a real business case. You need to come up with strategy and value statements. It's something we work with our clients to do, so if you happen to also be a Gartner client, call. I'll take you through strategy statements. And then deliverable-based milestones, which means don't spend 1 second checking documentation. If they're not delivering, then you intervene. And if they don't deliver the second time, then you fire them. Life is good, and we get to value. Because it's really, paperwork is not a proxy for the product. The average PMO is about 2.16 on value. That's, if we're trying to get above 3.0, that's not very good. So we've got tremendous amount of work to do here. So, value generation. So we've said, benefits are contingent on a host of factors that are external to the project. We've got to understand, and this is one of the reasons that we're headed towards programs. You know, we tend to use the word project a lot. How many of you have programs running as a standard unit of measure in your watch? Okay, about 10% of you. I gotta tell you, your big projects are probably not big projects. They probably are programs. You really need to go understand program management because it's your get out of jail free card. Now, those of you who don't have a lot of experience in it, believe it or not, and I tend to be very low process, low overhead, but there's a book called Managing Successful Programs, and that's the British spelling that was originally done by the UK government. You can go order it from Amazon, Managing Successful Programs, go get that, and go get a book called The Handbook of Program Management by Dr. Brown. Now, those two things, they just help. They're just backup engines. You've also got to build, and this is truly where I get on my soapbox, so I'll make it quick. If you don't have a community of practice, you need one. Because all of this future we're describing, and this is really critically important, it takes constant involvement and attention. So that's why we hire permanent people to manage projects and programs. All of this is a matter of making sure that things don't start to move in the wrong direction. Once we get the product focus, portfolio focus, and a financial focus, those are the things. We make this what we're concerned about. We start generating value. Couple of rules. Projects and programs are approved in a portfolio concept only. Now, I understand this is me giving you advice. Your management's gonna do what they're gonna do, but it's amazing what you can lead management to do if you do the work up front. I have never seen a management team, if you walk in with a well-designed portfolio and all the analytics done, I've never seen a management committee go, well, how dare you? What would ever make you think you had the right to do it? They'll go, thank you. They're still free to make any decision they want, but the more information you give them, the better. It's all about strategy. Now, I am sometimes a minority of maybe one or two, and I understand that some businesses don't have strategy, but strategy is where you spend your money. So no matter how airy-fairy, no matter how whatever it is, you can sit down and you can infer strategy based on spending, based on where they put their time and effort. Once you get the strategy, you can mirror back, and here's what's been proposed. Again, we'll look at something that's a quick way to do it. All of this is under your control, and you can get tools that help you. You've got to fit, as I said, you've got to make sure that you know the benefit up front because you can't realize it at the end. And essentially, you've got to get dynamic reviews. We all understand, and I could go on forever about how we've got to get a handle on change control because we keep covering up for badly run projects by approving change orders. Donna advocates one change order, maximum of one change order per project. Okay, that's it, one. And it doesn't get spent lightly. Now, there are many, many, many things that back that up, so I haven't lost my mind, nor have I forgotten what it actually means to run a project or program. But these are practices that I'm advocating we have to change. Another one. How many of you work in IT? Well, not all of you. Many of you in IT are probably siloed into doing half the job. Nobody can afford that going forward. Nothing we do technically has to reside in IT. It doesn't have to reside anywhere. It's completely an independent function. Over time, one of the criticalities, and we're seeing this more and more and more, is that a project or program has to include 100% of the changes necessary to get something done. In fact, some of our research is now showing that about 60% of the total cost of a program is going completely to non-IT related things. So it's important to understand that. And as I said, the value-based portfolio transcends IT. So what we're seeing is strategy execution. We're seeing, so in 2010, I wrote Gartner's first research piece on the Enterprise Program Management Office, and it was all strategy focused. I got maybe 5-10 calls a year. I now probably get 3 a week. So that's since 2010. It's an absolute trend. Measurable benefit is all accounting for value. We've got to get that nailed down. Business capabilities, roadmaps, and blueprints are your friend. And there, we tend to think, when I talk to organizations, especially IT, about roadmaps, they get really grimly technically systems, and you know what? A roadmap is a tool for programs, it's a tool for everything. Understanding what the moving parts are critical for us going forward. And then, how many of you in your organization are now seeing the development of customer-facing apps, mobile apps, other things that are starting? That is going to be, we're seeing this at Gartner, and that's changing everything. We're seeing money move out into the business. We're seeing development. SaaS is also changing everything. So a lot of what the norm is moving. And what I was hoping to substantiate from the beginning is we had the trend of industrialized IT, which is tied to projects and programs, that is basically the tides going out. And then we've got what happened in 2008 coming in, and this is changing things. Quick example of what it might look like if you adopted a different process. Benefits realization approach. Now, results chain, and I've taken a very, very, very basic high-level results chain and just put it down there. Essentially, what it says is, here's what my assumption is, here's how I'm going to embody those assumptions, and here are the phased outcomes I expect. Most IT-related things are early outcomes. So I'm going to build a new web page to showcase a product. If I'm right, I will see revenue run through that sales cart. Or I will see that somebody will register and I can later find out that that customer bought from me. Whatever we decide the metrics are, that's what we validated prove. Simple little program plan that says we have many, many simultaneous things going on, and then we've got to manage them all as a whole, which is one of the reasons we've got to move away from standalone projects into putting projects in programs, and we govern them as a program. This is my strategy matrix. I love this little chart. This is the secret. You want to know how to do portfolio management? There it is. That's really all you need. It can, you know, you can do it in an Excel spreadsheet. I wouldn't necessarily recommend it, but in theory, it makes a good example. So this assumes you put your strategy across your columns. I love balanced scorecard for the rows, and we won't get sidetracked into why, but trust me, it's a good place to start. Every project in your pipeline, plus the ones that are in process, gets to go in one box and one box only. This is for the initial pass. What you'll find is some of those great ideas don't pass muster. Because when you look at it, I look at strategy D. All of a sudden, I find out that, you know what? Project 12 just is, for the money, is just never going to return what I can get for doing something else. It's not that it's a bad project. It's not that it doesn't return something. But in light of all of this, it's the weakest one. And we never have enough money to do everything people are asking us to do. If you show something like this to management, they tend to respond well. I had one client. She'd been trying to get into the CEO for a long time. And she finally did, and she sent me her 16-page PowerPoint deck that she was going to show him. And I said, I'm going on speakerphone. And I shredded what I had printed out. And she said, that bad? I said, no. No CEO wants to hear 16 pages. He's going to be asleep at page 2. She went in with that. Now, she had so much. On the process improvement line, she had 45 little dots. She just walked in with it. She put it in front of him. And he said, who approved that? Cut 15 of them in that meeting and set up a monthly review with her going, I knew they were out there doing something I didn't want them to do. It's that simple. People just need visibility they can understand. So doing portfolio first, it isn't short-term thinking, it's real prioritization. Clients tend to use prioritization, meaning what do we do first? Prioritization is what do we do at all? So if you ever find yourself in first land, you're probably in demand management and you've lost sight of value. So it's a really handy thing because I do always understand alligators, we're always wrestling them. So we need to build a support system to get us back to what keeps us focused on the right things. So ensure your tracking systems are measuring the right thing. How many of you use estimate to complete? That's all you ever talk about with your project managers? And that they actually know how to calculate estimate to complete? That is critical. If they don't have the skills, go find your CFO's foot and step on it until they send somebody out. But it's got to be a real estimate to complete. You've got to track the dollars and understand what's going on. Now, I appreciate that when I talk dollars, it's what I've done since I got out of grad school. But the money speaks such volumes. You understand what's going on, where am I spending it, why am I spending it. It also constantly, the more you can get your project managers trained to say, why are we spending this to get that? That's how we control scope. It's actually that simple. You want me to add what to save so-and-so 5 minutes of time when that's going to take me weeks and dollars? It becomes much more simple. Track the deliverables. It's all about how far you've gotten by what time. And does it work? How many of you have gone to Agile or at least iterative techniques? Okay. So 50% of you good, the other 50%. You need to. Essentially, all a milestone was, and a milestone is not defined by documentation is done. I don't care about paperwork. That's just the stuff. It's like filing your tax return. Track the people. The good ones are rare and can only be done one. It's a simultaneous equation. It really is, because you're fitting uniquely exactly what is optimized to your people, your organization, what's happening in the outside market. It's a unique set of decisions, and you're always looking at it. And you're responsible. I always get nervous when clients talk about governance. Well, you know who your governance is. It's your operating committee. Maybe in certain circumstances, it's a few other people. But they're just there because they get the big bucks and have the decision rights. All the heavy lifting, it's done by you guys. It's not walk in and give them a list of projects. In some ways, now the great things you can get out of a scoring model, as long as you understand that a scoring model supports decision making, it's not decision making. So there are all sorts of things you can do, but fundamentally, you've got to make sure that the analysis is there to support good decision making. My rule of thumb used to be that I could walk in with a proposed portfolio, and I was pretty much 85% of the percent of the time right about what they wanted to approve. I could never get 100% because they always know more than I would. That's their job. They have access to longer-term investment decisions and other things. But that means we might have to do models, we might have to do scenarios, we might have to do all sorts of things. But we need to understand what it should be and why. Now, once you've got basic portfolio management done, one of my coworkers, Robert Handler, developed this many years ago when he published his book on portfolio management. If you're in IT, and this is a classic IT example, it's all a feedback loop. You've got, what am I doing that's innovative? What am I doing that's new? What are my discoveries? Then we've got that going into, you know, what have I got that's an application or an old business process I've got to change? What's happening at the enterprise level? And all of these feed back. Now, Robert, I think, published this, maybe 10 years ago. Very, very few of our clients have been really there. But this is the future. So nothing I've been telling you today is new stuff. What's changed is our option to disregard it, basically. We will get here because we have to get there. I talk to people who have application portfolios. Company will remain nameless. So when I worked for another analyst firm, they wanted to talk about their portfolio process. And they said they had 1,400 applications. And I said, you've got a problem with your new project portfolio because you're obviously not doing the right things. He says, no, we're the best in the world. 3 years ago, working for Gartner, I heard from the same company. They're now trying to talk about their new project portfolio process. And I said, how many applications do you have? They said, 1,465. I said, see, I rest my case. You're not looking at what you're doing and why. You're just starting over. For cost, for other things in the future, it's going to be critical to get everything in balance. What are the assets? What are the software? What are the business capabilities? Why have we got it? And what are we doing? You need to reorient your PMO. So the good news, everything I'm saying, you don't need anybody's permission to change. No one's. You don't have to ask. You just have to go back and say, I sat in a room with a bunch of other people, and I got this really bright idea, so I think we're going to change a few things about how we do it. That's it. That's all you have to do, and you're automatically avoiding that problem and step four to step five. So the investment units of the future, everything. Right now, everything is either a project or it's operations. We've set it up, and then we've tried to operationalize projects. What a horrifically, horrifically bad idea. Does everybody remember that projects are complex adaptive systems that are executed under conditions of uncertainty? And the whole reason any of us have a job is because you can't run it as an operation. Because if you could, we'd have a different title and work in a different department. But it's the uncertainty, it's the risk, it's the fact that there's nothing standard about it. My best friend is the culprit behind the 1996 Pinbach Guide. When he set about to write it, he was trying to capture what at that time was the first compilation of what competent project managers did. Now, Bill is a process wonk. The truth is, and I'm not telling tales out of school, he's never really been a project manager. And he captured all this data and he did a brilliant job putting it down. Then we decided it was holy writ. It was just what you share in a community of practice, and we need to get back to understanding that everything is about what you do under uncertainty. So tomorrow we're going to need to start talking about programs for large change, projects for interorganizational change, which includes IT. Those are the real projects. New product development. That philosophy and the fact that the definition of products is changing. If you are in IT and all of a sudden you're doing mobile apps that generate revenue, let me tell you, you better know what new product development looks like because you can't afford to develop it the way you do with IT systems. The story that comes from a Gartner source. The statement was the CMO, the chief marketing officer, walks in and says, I want a mobile app ready in 3 weeks, and I expect it'll generate revenue. And the answer is, what? 3 weeks? I can't even get the business case done. I can't get the portfolio committee done. I can't get the project team set. And it'll probably take us 6 months to code. And what are we, 9 months versus 3 weeks? Something's got to change here. And it's going back to actually accelerated product development cycles. We'll be at product releases. A lot of what we projectize, I talk to organizations where the debate is a project 80 hours or maybe 160? Guys, a task is 80 hours. 160 is an eye blink. If you got to do it, it's in releases. And then a lot more continuous change efforts. Whether we call it Kaizen, workouts, it doesn't really matter. To stay up with the pace of change, we're going to have a way to simply ask people to work to get something changed. We don't have a lot of overhead on it. We don't have a lot of governance. You just do it. And then finally, initiatives, which is speculative exploratory work. So I don't know if it's going to work or not. I can't afford to really have all this overhead, and I'm not going to fill out scope documents. I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to take a couple of people off, and I'm going to invent the new PC in Boca Raton because that's where my company is going to make revenue. And it'll all take money, and it must be accounted for. And when we lose this control of the unit of project, the ability to understand where the dollars flow more flexibly is going to become very critical. So we expect to see changes in funding. So where everything is either in the business and they fund IT or in IT, it's definitely going to move. So we're going to look at operational, you know, putting some of it into planned funding cycles, operations, production, formal CapEx. If I'm going to build a new building, you know, clearly that's going to stay in my CapEx folder. I'm going to have a lot more shared. So we're actually going to have to figure out what a shared service center really is, and I won't gear up on that diatribe, but the only thing you need to remember is you can have any color you want so long as it's black, because that's the rule of a shared service center, and if you're not living on that, you're just doing centralized IT. You'll also have product development has different funding cycles, and then we'll have to say, where are we putting the fast money? So emergent responses from within a SBU or a function, that's where there's money for them to go do a three-week mobile app, and that's what we would expect. So again, understanding where the funding's coming from, what the supposition is around how the money is being used is going to become critical to us where it hasn't been in the past. So what will the PMO look like in the future? It will be a portfolio office. Because I'm not sure, you know, we won't see centralized project management in the future. It will think and speak in the language of money. It'll be consultative and analytical. It will understand value and how the business can generate it. Now, I'm just going down the list of what we see. There's a tremendous amount of stuff underneath that. Reviews, status meetings are going to be, how's this investment going? So part of what I'm saying is everybody in this room has a fiduciary responsibility to your company. That process thing that you've been doing, that's not your responsibility. The fact that that money got invested in something and it's got to come out the back end, or you got to kill it as fast as you can, that's your responsibility. Constantly understanding and making sure that people understand that all of this is uncertain. We've led management astray. Because if this is just like turning the crank, you know what? It's operations. It's not our concern. Give it back. Give it away. Because that's not what we're here for. If it's not risky, if it's not uncertain, if there aren't things we don't know, then, yeah, you know, it's just not what we're here for. And that's part of the future. The PMO also needs to be regarded as a trusted advisor and honest broker. You can't be a portfolio office unless everybody knows you're completely fair. You can tell them that their business case sucks, and if they don't want to improve it, it's probably not going to get approved, but it's not behind their back. It's very much open. So Monday morning, learn to speak the language of money. If you do nothing else, say, where, how many dollars am I overseeing? And what kind of a return do I think my company's getting? Because when I ask clients, do you really think that everything you're doing is valuable? They go, heck no. And I'm going, well, why don't you like prove it and recommend you kill some things? And they go, just my job to do. And I'm going, nah, you know, you've got to play politics, don't misunderstand. But where you can, even in the most onerous of situations, you can often start making changes. Develop a collaborative approach to business cases. If you're not doing that already, never ask someone to go do a business case and submit it to your organization, participate in it. There are great techniques to get outstanding results. In the next 90 days, if you don't have a tool in one form or another, go get one. 10 years ago, it was a different story. These tools are mature. They do what you need. They're SaaS alternatives. We finally reached the point. I usually stand up here and say, all project managers are Luddites. Well, now I'm calling us, you know, worse than Luddites, because it's just, it's past time. You no longer have to spend $1.5 million to get a big named tool. There are cheaper, better, faster alternatives. Transparency and visibility of the portfolio is critical. 12 months. Get your program interdependencies, because that's how you cumulatively add value. Big bang, all big deal, go dark, deliver at the end, has quite frankly never worked. So you're always looking at how you deliver a continuous stream of value. And then look at product management. This is something that Mike mentioned. It's something we talk about at Gartner a lot. It's really critical, because a product says, I understand what the value of what I'm doing is, and I know what I'm adding. So it's a longer-term perspective. There's still risks. There's still uncertainties. It changes a little. But this is what's critical. So with that, I want to say thank you very much and turn it over to Ben.
Thank you, Donna. That was amazing.
Thank you.
So, guys, I'm between you and lunch, so I'm going to keep this brief. There's two things I want to get across over the next 10 minutes or so. The first is we'll look at some of the key concepts in enterprise portfolio management behind UMT360's solution. The second is this is a tremendous Tuesday for UMT. We have a bunch of sessions in the latter half of today, and I want to promote those because you're going to see these concepts in action through different customers and different UMT sessions. So with that, let's start at a 100,000-foot level. What is the overarching challenge that many people are facing today? Well, really, scarcity is a reality for many organizations. Demand for growth is greater than our capacity to invest. In other words, it's difficult to fund innovation. As the slide shows here, a lot of operational costs are simply eroding that capacity, making it difficult to fund innovation. When I think about this, the gap between demand and capacity is growing. There's two reasons for that. The first reason is an uncertain economy. What we've seen in the recent years is budgets being cut, making it difficult to fund innovation, again, because the run investment is eroding that capacity. The second is even if budgets remain flat or grow, there's a rising operational cost, which again is eroding that capacity. So organizations really face the challenge now to do more than less, or executives are facing a challenge to do more with less. And they're turning to enterprise portfolio management techniques to address this, look at improving both top line and bottom line performance. So if you have enterprise portfolio management capabilities, one thing you're going to be able to do is look at getting visibility into that operational cost, that operational spend, what comprises it, and then leverage techniques to rationalize it. I'm not going to go into the techniques today, such as application portfolio management, IT optimization, infrastructure optimization, sourcing strategies, other such things. But again, you're going to be able to sort of get that scalpel out and more surgically and more precisely rationalize those operational costs, more importantly, freeing up funds for innovation. We'll take a look at how we can do that or some of the key concepts behind that in a second. Before I get there, I think it's important to define what is portfolio management. It's something I've struggled with over the years. To me, the best definition I've found is understanding the relationships that exist between related portfolios to drive better business decisions. And ultimately, when you're driving better business decisions or investment decisions, you need a level of financial due diligence and financial transparency. So we see with many organizations who embark on different flavors of portfolio management, be it project portfolio management, application portfolio management, product portfolio management, they find themselves on a sort of freight train heading towards the world of financial management. So it's two things that we see. It's about inter-portfolio relationships and financial intelligence and transparency. Does that make sense? I see some heads nodding, really. So it's not my intention to drill into the different initiatives or activities you may want to look at to rationalize your operational costs. I want to look at four high-level principles that are going to help you do that. I think the first is more of a mindset change. When you look at your project portfolio, when you look at your business and your IT assets, you've got to view them as business investments. You've got to understand their financial contribution, their business value, as Donna mentioned, their risk, and having understood that, decide whether you're going to commit the funds. The next two are probably the more important. The ability to, as I mentioned, integrate your portfolios. You've got to understand what comprises that operational spend, which portfolios, and so forth. So the ability to integrate that view is important. If we take this example here, we decompose a business process or business capability. We look at it just from an IT perspective. It could be made up of one or more applications, which may have interrelationships. If we break down the application, the spend of that application is going to come from projects, maintenance activities, IT services, and so forth. So we end up building a dynamic blueprint of our portfolios and have a better understanding of the operating fabric of our business. The second benefit of this, as Mike alluded earlier, is moving from project to product-based thinking. It's the business processes, the capabilities that are driving our business. We now understand what comprises that capability, and we can start making decisions at the aggregate level and deciding which projects to invest in. So it's decision-making at a higher level. Donna talked about programs. Mike talked about project to product-based thinking. The next key thing, as I mentioned earlier, is financial intelligence or financial transparency. If you want to take money out, you've got to know where it is. And again, the ability to flow financial information through based on this model is key. Again, if we go back to this very simplistic example, obviously everything has costs. But we see the cost of the application here is coming from the activities within it, the projects, the maintenance activities, the IT services. It's a container of other portfolio information. And again, that in turn is rolling up to the business process too. So again, being able to see how the money is flowing through that model is key to making those decisions. And Donna talked about the fourth one, roadmaps. Being able to then make decisions on your asset portfolios and your programs and see that through a roadmap view, a time-based relationship view of when this change is going to hit the organization. And more importantly, when you're managing this, knowing the cross-portfolio impact of any change. So if a project is delayed, what's the impact on the corresponding asset, the capability, and notifying people accordingly. So it's all based on relationships, functional, financial, time-based relationships. So having onboarded those concepts, you can look at different initiatives to rationalize that operational cost and free up funds for innovation. So let's pivot and look at the other line now. So project and portfolio management is obviously a discipline that we all use to drive innovation to market and drive revenue growth. Well, despite the significant investments in project and portfolio management over the years, without enterprise portfolio management techniques, it's really failing to deliver the anticipated results. Now, analysts don't necessarily all agree on the statistics, but they agree there's a problem, and you can see some of them here. Standish Group, 18% of projects fail, 43% of projects are coming in over budget or late. Gartner say that one out of three completed projects experience a cost overruns. PMI even say that today you're not getting 33% of the business value from your portfolios. UMT has spent a lot of time working in PPM, and again, without adopting enterprise portfolio management thinking, you're in danger today of losing up to around 46% of the planned business value from your portfolio. I think one of the primary things here goes back to what I said earlier. We're simply not viewing projects as investments. If we view them as investments, we'll spend less time maybe thinking about some of the tactical aspects of the project, managing the schedule, resources, etc. Now, they are very important disciplines, so I'm not downplaying the importance of that. I'm just saying if you agree that projects at heart are business investments, we need to up-level the importance of the financial metrics to at least to a similar level. So let's look at how some of that 46% of business value can be eroded. I like to think about this slide or these three areas as the trifecta of business value erosion. So the first, innovation and estimating. So today, I'm sure many of us are operating in sort of annual planning mode. Who operates in an annual planning mode? Show of hands. So a good portion of the room. So now in that mode, requests can come from anywhere, right? It can be a structured request, it could be a hallway conversation, an email. Demand can come from anywhere in the organization. And then we're leveraging, you know, tried and tested portfolio management techniques to optimize that demand under known budgets. But have you ever stopped to ask yourself, is that the right set of projects in the first place? Or are we just optimizing the best of a bad lot? Taking some of this portfolio level thinking, moving the decisions up to the capabilities, making decisions on the capabilities themselves in terms of how they impact the business is going to lead you to generate a better set of demand in the first place. The next aspect is cost estimating or financial estimating. In an annual planning process, we tend to throw sort of high-level numbers at the problem. So if you're overestimating, the chances are you're leaving projects behind. You're leaving potential business value on the table. If you're underestimating, your portfolio is going to look very healthy, but through that execution year, you're going to soon run out of funds and start to have to de-scope or cut projects, and you're going to start to hemorrhage business value. Next one, project success rates. We saw some stats on the previous slide. 18% of project fails, 43% of projects coming in over budget. You know, these stats impact your business value. Failed projects, you get no value from. Projects coming in over budget, you're going to have to de-scope some projects. Maybe you can't fund other projects. You're hemorrhaging value again. And the last one is budget utilization. So maybe you don't get, you know, through resource management issues or conflicts or different scenarios, you don't get to kick off all the projects you plan to in the year. Maybe some projects are unplanned carryovers. You don't finish them. They get deferred to the next planning year. You're deferring the value from the initial portfolio and losing value. So we went through those sort of two high-level concepts on the operational side and on the growth or the innovation side. So as Donna mentioned, there is going to be a central shift from PPM to enterprise portfolio thinking. And again, this is an opportunity for us as a PMO to evolve, move from the tactical into the strategic. And this is not an exhaustive list, and I certainly don't intend to go through all of it here, but you see some of the subtle differences between the traditional PMO world and the new enterprise program or portfolio management world. From an investment standpoint, maybe we evolve from being responsible for just the discretionary budgets into responsible for all budgets, the run budget or the operational, as well as discretionary. From a portfolio focus, we move beyond just project portfolios. We're responsible for managing all portfolios and their relationships and how they align back to the business capabilities within the organization. From an innovation and portfolio selection standpoint, we just talked about this. Maybe we move from this bottom-up demand generation into a more of a top-down, capability-driven approach. I said I wasn't going to go through all of these. It looks like I am. So I'll let you read the rest. Anyway, there is an important shift from tactical to strategic, and it's a great opportunity for us, everyone in the room here. So how does UMT360 help? Well, UMT360 is a leading enterprise portfolio management solution that helps to digitalize investment planning controls across your business and IT portfolios, driving the financial intelligence needed to make smarter investment decisions. I'm not going to go through all the boxes here. Connected enterprise, financial transparency, portfolio attention, and synchronized roadmaps. We talked about these concepts in the previous slide. UMT360 is also the only enterprise portfolio management solution built on SharePoint with seamless integration with Project Server, helping you get even more value from your PPM investment today or take your PPM to the next level. It's something we like to call PPM Plus. And although there, and I show you, there are PPM Plus, although there are many vertical and horizontal solutions that the tool can empower, now these are the three that we're talking about here at this conference. PPM Plus financial intelligence, getting complete financial transparency by driving integrated project and portfolio financial controls across your project and program portfolios. And we're recognized by Gartner in the Cool Vendor Award exactly for that capability. So it was a research paper written on how organizations today need to better integrate financial management with PPM to drive results. The solution can take you beyond projects, right? We talked about enterprise portfolio management being more than just project portfolios, bringing together all the portfolios. So PPM Plus application portfolio management capabilities to help you modernize, rationalize, get more business value from that important asset class. And PPM Plus IT business management, bringing together the three domains of IT, projects, applications, infrastructure, providing the ability to help CIOs and their team more effectively run the business of IT or run IT like a business. And again, been recognized for the last 2 years straight by Gartner as a visionary in this new emerging world of integrated IT portfolio analysis. So later today, we'll be going deeper into two of these scenarios, PPM Plus Financial Intelligence and PPM Plus Application Portfolios. When I think about PPM Plus Project Financial Intelligence, now, really, we're providing the capabilities across the entire PPM lifecycle, from establishing the investment planning and controls, to building a better business case with more robust financial estimates, to providing financial tracking and variance analysis, allowing you to move from more of a dynamic or agile planning and replanning model, as well as going beyond the life of the standard PPM lifecycle to look at benefits realization. So it truly runs the full gambit. When you think about application portfolio management, this is a great example of where you need to integrate your portfolios. A stronger application portfolio management assumes you're integrating your PPM discipline. Actually, both disciplines get better when they are binded together. So when I think about UMT360's application portfolio management capabilities, again, it's establishing those governance controls for that asset type. It's standardizing and building your application catalog. It's a better view into the cost of ownership and the cost of the applications. All that information in one place to make better portfolio analysis decisions on how to enhance, retire, maintain applications, teeing those decisions up in roadmaps, and just measuring the application portfolio on a continuous basis. And again, we're going to go deeper into these at the booth. We're going to go deeper into these in a session later today at 3:15. So I want to promote some of the sessions that are occurring later today. These are the sessions of some of these concepts in action, and I hope you'll be able to attend. First and foremost, because we're running quite long today, we're not going to do a Q&A session with Donna here. We're actually going to have a Q&A session with Donna on the booth at 1 o'clock. So in our booth, UMT booth, at 1 o'clock today, there's an office hours with Gartner, i.e. Donna. So I hope to see you there. Directly after lunch, there's two great sessions. One, Frank LaRocca from Con Edison. Frank, I think, is in the room. Do you want to stand up, Frank? Frank's there. Frank will be talking really about his experiences of driving a dynamic process of replanning within Con Edison, getting complete financial transparency across a $2 billion capital portfolio. It's a very, very interesting story, and I hope you get a chance to attend. Also, at the same slot, we have ATCO, and I'm not sure if Sudanese is in the room. Please stand up if you could. Say hi. Sudanese is going to share her experiences of running portfolio management with Project Server and UMT 360, and that's going to be a great session too. We have our partner-led product session at 3:15, where we're going to go deeper into project financial intelligence and application portfolio management. And there's one session that's not listed here. I think the last session of the day, we have Marquette University talking about their experiences and the benefits of moving to Project Server 2013 and UMT 360. So I hope you get a chance to prioritize these sessions, and we'd love to see you there. So if any of you are in this competition, our passport competition, please get your booklet stamped, and Nicole is standing there at the end of the room. Thank you for your time today. Again, we're going to do Q&A on the booth.